Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday Post News Update. I'm John Pollock, along with Wei Ting. We just can't go with these gaps, these non-Dynamite Wednesdays, without speaking to one another. So, luckily, the wrestling world dumped a ton of news on us, so we have lots to discuss beyond how you're doing, which is, first and foremost, my number one question for you.
I'm doing really well. I mean, it's the weather continues to be really nice. Oops, sorry about that. But the weather continues to be really nice in the city. So I just came back from doing a bit of yard work, actually. And I'm about to get my second shot later today.
Oh, that's right. That's today. Mm-hmm. How are you preparing for the potential, like tomorrow? Are you looking at tomorrow as a bit of a, it's not a write-off for you. You're actually kind of busy tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, podcasting doesn't really require too much physical activity. So even if I am somehow, bedridden or something, I think I could pull the laptop over and I'm sure there'll still be a show, but I don't expect, to be too inconvenienced doing what we do.
Yeah. It seems like it's a total coin flip of how people respond to it. My mom just got her second dose and was fine. But another friend of mine, I mean, he was bedridden for a day. So for your sake, I hope that Thursday does not include the debut of the first ever unwellness policy.
Ooh, wow. It would be a special edition, but I think we'll be all right. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's great. That's great news on your behalf. AEW, we're going to start off with the news because, Wei, the world is opening up. So that means wrestling are booking big venues for the rest of this year. We'll start with AEW because there were several announcements today. Tony Khan was on WFAN announcing that they're going to be going to Queens, New York, September 22nd at Arthur Ashe Stadium. This is the main facility that they use for the U.S. Open every year. It's a stunning building, one that has never housed professional wrestling and is, the fact that this was announced on a major New York radio station and the fact that they're going to New York, it's the largest building that they've ever booked. It's very ambitious because on the AEW schedule, as of now, the week prior is the debut at the Prudential Center in Newark that was going to house Blood and Guts. And 1 week after, on September 29th, they're supposed to go to the Blue Cross Arena in Rochester. So, I mean, that's 3 weeks in a row, major buildings. And Arthur Ashe Stadium, at least for tennis, it can hold over 23,000 people. So who knows what this will be scaled at. But it is, this is going to be the most ambitious three-week run we've ever seen from AEW when it comes to venue sizes.
It's incredibly exciting, I would say. The Northeast is a very underserved market, especially obviously over the past year plus now, when you're talking about AEW. So demand is huge. And, if they're going to try to capitalize on that pent up demand, now would be the time.
Yeah, that's going to be the big question that I think it's hard to get like a strong sense of things where we're seeing all these tickets go on sale. It seems like SummerSlam, there is a huge demand for. And then you've got your secondary level shows that, are not going to be those immediate sellouts. But I think that the goal here, they're going to market this, I guess, as Grand Slam. Like Tony Khan compared, this show will be akin to a Winter is Coming, Blood and Guts. I mean, it's going to have to be promoted as way above and beyond just your typical Dynamite. And I think those are the big shows that I'm curious to see what the demand is going to be, what this is scaled at, because it's going into the New York market in a venue that WWE has never run. It's New York has always been a tough market. As a few years ago when WrestleMania was there, you kind of had like you had your giant buildings like a Madison Square Garden, which is super expensive to run, or a Barclays Center that WWE has, you know, made its unofficial home there. But then the drop off was so big, you'd go to like the Manhattan Center in New York. And this is sort of, I wouldn't say in between. It's not like any company can just run Arthur Ashe Stadium, but it is, you know, to the point that was made in the article in the New York Daily News was, you know, this is going into a WWE stronghold, but going to a fresh venue that WWE has never been on. Like, it doesn't have the history of WWE that AEW is kind of putting its stamp on. And I think it's I really like the idea of this location. And I think it just took some interesting scouting to say, why couldn't we run at a stadium that is associated with tennis as opposed to pro wrestling or indoor stick and ball sports?
You know, in terms of sight lines, in terms of like, you know, just maybe the intimacy of like a place that can hold a lot of people, but is sort of like squared off to feel intimate, like you would have for a tennis stadium. I think I'm really excited to see how this will look for professional wrestling. So that part's really exciting. And, you know, overall, it's like there are a lot of places. Like, ultimately, you just need a space to house a ring. And they managed to find a place that is relatively fresh for that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's it'll be a very interesting set of shows to see how they do. I mean, Newark and Queens, not exactly a far distance apart. So it's you know, trying to run a 10,000 plus seat arena one week and then the next week going to a 23,000 seat stadium. So it will be very interesting to see that and what the demand is like. It seems like there's a lot of enthusiasm for the show in the hours since it's been announced. That kind of trumpeted New Japan Zone announcements this morning on the Kizuna Road card. They have rescheduled the Tokyo Dome. It's now going to take place on July the 25th with Shingo Takagi versus Kota Ibushi in the main event for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. In addition to that, they're going to continue their Wrestle Grand Slam series with not one, but two dome shows at the MetLife Dome, which used to be the Cebu Dome that they last ran in 2014 for the G1 Finals. That will be September 4th and 5th, a Saturday and Sunday. So buckle up for that weekend, Wei, because that is All Out weekend on top of it with two stadium events from New Japan. So the wrestling world is back to normal, I think, is what we are starting to see here. Again, I think a lot of these choices are going to be, listen, we have lost a lot of revenue and we are going to try and maximize it. But I mean, granted, we still have the summer. This will be after the Olympics. But with Tokyo, I mean, we just don't know even what capacity restrictions might be like come even July, much less September. And that July 25th date, that's 2 days after the Olympics begin. So they're running the Tokyo Dome right in the midst of the Olympics, which was kind of the whole theory of not running the G1 to collide with the Olympics.
You know, at this point, I'm sure this is perhaps the best of the options that they have remaining. You know, they're dedicated to running these stadium shows. Again, you know, we don't know what maybe social distancing parameters may be like by then, but I guess the theory is that the bigger place you book, the more people you could fit in there, no matter what the restrictions are. So it'll be a test. You know, this will be this one coming up in the Tokyo Dome will be a big test for Shingo Takagi and Kota Ibushi to see, you know, what level of drawing power they have. Do we have any idea how many people they're able to fit in there?
This for the Tokyo Dome?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the current restrictions, as last I checked, was still like a cap of 5,000, I think. But I mean, we're talking July. So, I mean, things could be different by then. But I don't know of any updated restrictions if they could actually open it up further.
Right. Okay. Well, 5,000, I mean, you know, you need, if it is 5,000, you need 5,000 people who are willing to see Shingo Takagi versus Kota Ibushi. And I would hope that they would have enough for that.
You would hope so. I mean, it's not like just New Japan running. Like, they are not hitting the capacity for any of these Korakuen shows. Granted, it's like a different beast. But it's also, it's just the timing of it is interesting that they're going to put it right smack dab in the middle of the Olympics. I guess their one hang up is they're not going to do a dome show in August to mess up wedding plans or anything for you. So they're avoiding stadium shows in August.
I guess so. You know, we also have to remember, I mean, after this will likely be the G1, where they have probably, you know, a number of dates that are in flux at the moment right now, and probably some big places booked for those that they've yet to announce as well.
I would think that if they have the wherewithal to move forward, yeah, I would think like the G1, you want to maximize a year that's probably seen a lot of lost revenue, money left on the table for them. I mean, this has been a struggle for New Japan 2021. And then the other promotion making an announcement on Wednesday was Ring of Honor, who are going to run the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia on Friday, August 20th, and Saturday, August 21st. This will be their Glory by Honor series of shows. Night one will be Rush and Flip Gordon for the ROH title. Night two, this sounds excellent on paper, Rush and Dragon Lee against Bandido and Rey Orus. And the second night, interestingly enough, it will go head-to-head with SummerSlam. Not in the same market, but for somebody at home, these will be Honor Club shows on top of it. So, I mean, the general gist is way that all of these companies are coming out of the pandemic and to varying degrees of what restrictions are in those parts of the world, but it does certainly represent that these are companies that are moving forward and have ambitious plans for the rest of the year.
And there are only so many Sundays and so many Saturdays. You know?
That's it.
Yeah.
Looking to NXT from Tuesday night. First of all, I really enjoyed this episode of NXT. I thought it was, they went less on match quantity and instead everyone got like significant time. We were limited to four matches, a really big angle at the start of the show. The tornado tag was like, I watched this in real time and this was just nonstop action for the duration of when it went. It was just like watching a video game for 15 minutes. I thought it was just the pace was incredible in this. The Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai versus Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter match greatly exceeded my expectations. Like, Casey Catanzaro came into this like exceptionally green, but an unbelievable athlete. That silly string she did was more impressive than the original. It was very cool. And I just thought she really stood out in the match. And that one exceeded expectations. Trey Baxter, the former Blake Christian, debuted, losing to Kushida. That was a really tremendous 10-minute cruiserweight match. And then the only other match was a Breezango over Aichner and Marcel Bartel. But what were your thoughts on the show and the reintroduction of Samoa Joe?
Well, I echo a lot of your sentiments about the matches that stood out. Certainly the main event, you know, like delivered upon your NXT expected main event quality. And I think it's relatively novel to me to like feature something as, I would say by today's standards, mundane as a tornado tag match as sort of like a featured, you know, stipulation. But I thought they did such a great job with the match that the next time that they advertise a tornado tag, if it's involving the right talent, I'd be really looking forward to it because it does offer something that is quite different from your standard fair tag team style of match. So that was fantastic.
At worst, that would have been the number two match of the show at TakeOver.
Perhaps, yeah. I also completely agreed with you that, you know, Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter, like, you know, they're a team that aren't really booked to be very strong. They are what I would consider to be, you know, more fitting of the developmental aspect of NXT right now. But as far as that goes, they've been greatly exceeding my expectations. I think you absolutely see that continued comfort and chemistry between the two developing, and they really stood out to me. So I think they're really like starting to be primed for like a big story and actually, you know, a push coming out. Samoa Joe, you know, it seemed to just kind of confirm a lot of the reports that are out there. He is coming back in here, not as the sole GM, but as the assistant GM, well, basically the muscle to William Regal.
And there was no way they could have Joe come back and replace Regal after the man was in tears in the ring. That was an unbelievable promo from William Regal. It was fantastic. And then, yeah, when Joe came out, I was like, this guy will be the biggest heel in the world if he just accepts replacing William Regal. So, I mean, it was most interesting, the fact that they laid out, you can't put your hands on any participant unless provoked. And we certainly got physicality with Joe on this show and multiple teases as well of stuff down the road. So I don't think you can throw out the idea that they eventually do a match with Joe. The fact he laid hands on someone, I think, would lead you to that direction, but not something they'd be looking to do immediately.
Well, with Joe, I mean, like, physicality came in the form of a Kikina clutch. And, I mean, you know, like we see with Taz, you know, he could slap on that Taz mission to anybody and still not necessarily have to be you know, take a bump. And that seems to be, perhaps, like, the fact that they are doing the face-to-faces, like, it's making everybody want to see Karrion Kross versus Samoa Joe, or, like, Samoa Joe versus Adam Cole.
Or Pete Dunne. I mean, they did three teases on the show with Joe.
And I have to imagine, like, they're not stupid to think that, okay, like, we can't just throw this out there and not follow up on it. Nonetheless, there are no promises that he is going to get in the ring right now. I imagine it's still probably a case of them trying to wait and see to see if, you know, this guy can be cleared at some time in the future. In the meantime, though, I think it's a pretty good role, pretty good way of, like, keeping Samoa Joe within their system in a speaking role that makes him look menacing. He's able to come out there, slap on the clutch when he needs to. And inevitably, if he does get cleared, choking out Regal would be quite the way of, you know, going bad guy again.
Yeah, so that was kind of like the big angle on the show, and then they teed up for next week, Kushida versus Kyle O'Reilly. So that should be sensational, and the Diamond Mine coming back. The other angle on the show was LA Knight turning on Ted DiBiase, and then Cameron Grimes making the babyface save. I mean, the execution was fine. But I really thought that there was some legs here to DiBiase, like, at least pair these two together for some time before you do that, because DiBiase, either you're writing him off, or him as the babyface manager for Cameron Grimes, that's got an extremely short shelf life. I thought you could have got something out of DiBiase and, like, his protege, LA Knight, and then when you're ready, you could do this breakup angle. I just thought they sacrificed a lot of the investment here of where you could have gotten to with these two.
I imagine they see the pieces on the board and they think that DiBiase is going to be a babyface no matter what. He's a legend, and LA Knight is somebody they want to strictly make a heel. So I beyond that, I think they probably want to keep Cameron Grimes hot. You know, he is the project here, despite, I mean, LA Knight is too, to an extent, but I think the bigger project here, the main focus, is Cameron Grimes, who I thought they did a great job of. He did a great job of, you know, basically coming out of TakeOver looking like the guy with the who gained the most. He seems like one of the hottest, I would say, new acts in NXT right now. And I think, you know, to really kind of continue to keep him warm, they have to go right back to this rematch. And I guess pairing him with DiBiase as a babyface, that's probably their way of, you know, their best way of doing it.
Who left their phone at 1% that needed to charge throughout the show? Did you see these videos?
No.
They had these little vignettes where it was showing a battery charging. It started at 1%, and then later they had another one where the battery was up to 11%. So something is charging, but we never got a payoff to this.
Oh, this must have got cut out from the source that I watched the show on.
Oh, it was unplugged, I guess. That was NXT. I thought this was like a really good episode, and they're building up to the Great American Bash that will feature Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly in an unsanctioned match. Is that what they labeled it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of what we just did, right? At Stand and Deliver?
I guess so. I mean, it's another word
for
no
chapter
DQ.
This is the final chapter.
Well, how about another? Well, would you rather another ladder match in NXT?
No, I'm done with ladder matches for about 3 years. I could go without one. So yeah. I'm glad we're not doing a ladder match.
In either case, it's like, you know, you put those two names together, no matter, like, even if it's a, you know, reverse battle royal, I'll probably watch it. I mean, I like NXT. It's always like, at the end of it, you know, you zip through it in about an hour and a half, and I always feel like, hey, that was a good show. I have to say, like, there's really nothing, though, that feels that hot right now in terms of, like, you know, we kind of spoke about this, the freshness of the product that makes me feel like it's, I have to go and watch it. But, you know, whenever I commit myself to doing it, I always come out of it, you know, pretty satisfied. You know, like, if it was Samoa Joe coming back in wrestling, that would be a very different story. But I think NXT kind of needs that big name right now, you know, to really spark things.
Well, that's one thing with that opening angle, is that one complaint, and it's, you know, it's a similar one that people have on SmackDown, is that you have this big heel champion and doesn't have, like, Cross does not have the babyface challenger, and you were certainly left at the end of that segment of wanting Samoa Joe to be that babyface challenger at Cross's level. Now, with Roman Reigns, John Cena did an interview with Chris Van Vliet promoting F9 and said, matter-of-factly, he is coming back to WWE, but not going beyond that. So that is the rumored match for SummerSlam, and it seems to be that would be sufficient for a level of SummerSlam, because you don't have any of these giant babyfaces on SmackDown or even Raw, for that matter, to feed to Roman Reigns. So I think Cena is about as great an option as you have after he's been gone for a year and a half.
Outside of The Rock coming back, I mean, that is probably the biggest match you could put on with people that are associated with the company. So it's a big way of coming back from a pandemic.
I'm very curious to see, as the John Cena is doing all of this promotion for F9, like, how much of the China controversy comes up in all of this, because I could see, like, that being, like, if you're the film distributor and you're putting John Cena out there for media, like, that is, like, I'm amazed that, like, that was an enormous, enormous story. Like, there are people still talking about it. Like, it was pretty newsworthy.
Justice for Han feels like it's a lifetime ago, and I don't think anybody's even curious about what that's going to turn out to be like right now. The biggest talk coming out of F9 at the moment seems to be John Cena and the whole Taiwan comment. So I would have to imagine if he continues to do media, it'll come up somewhere.
Raw on Monday night, this came from Brandon Thurston at WrestleNomics, did 1,742,000 viewers, 0.49 in the demo. In Canada, they were up this week doing 196,500 viewers, and that was going against the Montreal Canadiens and Las Vegas Golden Knights that did 2.3 million viewers in Canada. Both in the U.S. and Canada, it was Raw's highest numbers since May 17th, so almost a month. So getting a spike this week, and do you attribute that to anything specific, Way? Because, you know, you were coming off a dreadfully received closing angle on Raw last week. However, the third hour held up very well last week. And this week, we saw a bump for Raw. And I can't say that it was solely because of that angle, but it was very significant. There was not a turnoff after last week's angle. That we can certainly say.
You know, I have no explanation for people who choose to come back and to watch more of the show after that angle. But what do we know in terms of competition that this show was up against?
It was going against the NBA. So there was an NBA playoff game. It wasn't like a competition-free night. In Canada, I'm almost more impressed with the Canadian number, because it wasn't just the NBA, but it was the Montreal Canadiens game. And there was a Blue Jays-Red Sox game going on. So it was... like, that to me is as impressive a number as the U.S. one, given that the NHL is going to be so much more significant in Canada than the U.S. on top of other sports competition. One match recommendation I want to make is from today's New Japan card. Since they announced this Gauntlet series with Yota Tsuji and Yuya Uemura, I looked at one lineup that I was very excited for, and it was today's show. And the opener was Hiroshi Tanahashi and Yuya Uemura, going almost 14 minutes. This might have been, I think this was my favorite opening match of the year. This was among my favorite matches, period, of the year. I'm not going to say match of the year. It wasn't to that level. Yuya Uemura is an unbelievable talent. This guy is 26. We rave about this guy and his... there is no one I enjoy more getting locked in a submission and fighting for his life to get to that rope. And Tanahashi was just... this, you're putting Yuya Uemura with all this incredible foundation that he has built and all these tools that are being refined constantly, and you put him in there with a wrestling genius like Tanahashi, who focused on the knee, he wore it down, used the dragon screw. It was all a prelude to finally getting the clover leaf, the second clover leaf of the match. And there is a spot at the end of this. Uemura has fought his heart out, and he has to come to the realization that I've been checkmated by the ace. And he just taps with such despair on his face at what he needs to do. It's a brilliant match. It is. I love this match.
Well, that's a wonderful retelling and description of it. You know, it's an intriguing match, because it, to me, is like you know, maybe arguably one of the best of the young lines, if not the best of the current class of young lines, along with, to me, like the king of the young lines in Hiroshi Tanahashi, somebody who has really mastered and taken to, you know, the fullest extent that style that, you know, they teach in that dojo. So that sounds like a really interesting match. Thanks for recommending it.
And we'll end on this. A congratulations to Renee Paquette. Her and John Moxley welcoming their daughter into the world. And I also want to send out best wishes to Don West, because it was revealed he's battling brain lymphoma. And that's just, man, what a sad story that is. Obviously, we want to send our best. I mean, just such a beloved figure to anyone that followed the first 10 years of TNA wrestling. I mean, he was someone that debuted. He was from a completely different world and came in. And he was very rough around the edges, but his excitement level and enthusiasm won everybody over in time. And he just became such a staple of the product. He was a phenomenal pitchman for the upcoming pay-per-views every week on Wednesdays, for Shop TNA. I mean, he became a valuable asset to that company. And I just think that anyone that was a follower of the TNA product, they certainly have a soft spot for Don West. And I'm sure everyone is rooting for him. That was just really unfortunate news to read about on Tuesday.
Completely, completely, completely. Yeah. Especially, you know, at this age, it's like, it's never happy to hear about something like that. But for somebody who, you know, seems just so full of life, I mean, it's going to be a really tough battle for him coming up. But the entire wrestling community, I'm sure, wishes him the best.
So we are going to sign off. Thank you very much for checking out this post-news update. We are going to be back later on this week. Lots of waiting coming up on Thursday with the Wellness Policy, a special start time, 1 p.m. Eastern, for all members of the Post Wrestling Cafe. And then it is time for MCU Later with Waiting and W.H. Park.
W.H. Park, the friendliest man in the bookstore himself. I look forward to talking about episode 2 of Loki. Are you going to be checking it out, John, today?
Wait, I am looking forward to episode 2. I watched episode 1, and then I listened to your review, and I also listened to our friends, the True North Nerds podcast with Brent Chittenden and company. So I am, and everyone seems to have very high marks for the beginning of Loki. And my one thing I really enjoyed about the first Loki is that I said when we did our review, I really liked that first Thor movie. And you do have like this parallel of these two powerful figures that are put out of their comfort zone in this world where their powers are somewhat depleted. They've got to adjust to the environment around them. And you have, you know, the hero in Thor and the less heroic Loki. So I kind of like that connection.
You know, you really are, I think, vying for that co-hosting spot, I think. Hosting spot. I think it should be you and WH doing a future MCU Later.
I don't know if I could. I cannot keep up with you two. There's not a chance. But I will be listening for the episode 2 review. So the episodes drop overnight Wednesday, Thursday morning, correct?
The episode's out right now, actually. So Wednesday morning.
Oh, it's out already. Okay. Well, I'm obviously not that excited because I was not aware of that fact.
Yeah, Wednesdays are kind of like a bit, you know, I have to get a bit used to it because I'm so used to the Thursday night, Friday morning drops, but these are Wednesday mornings now.
Have you watched it yet?
No, not yet.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to that.
I'll be taking in that second shot and enjoy my day on the couch.
Okay. We'll look forward to that. And then Friday night, Wei and I are back at midnight Eastern with Rewind a Dyna Down, reviewing SmackDown, which they just dropped. The big match announcement. Get ready. Angelo Dawkins versus Otis on Friday night, followed by Friday Night Dynamite. So we will have the 4-hour block, and then we will review both shows and take your calls. So looking forward to that. All cafe members will have live access for that. And then we have the Hell in a Cell post show Sunday night for our Double Double Ice Cap and Espresso patrons. Did I miss anything?
Hey, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/postwrestling. Always fun in the comment section. Leave a thought below. Leave a like, subscribe, and be nice.
Be nice. Goodbye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.